We must always remember that separate but equal is not equal.
I'm 16, and it's really difficult when you're coming from a conservative town like I do. I live in Toowoomba, and it's not that easy to be open there, and it's really difficult to sort of express yourself.
We all live in fear for our lives because every day you get up, you're not sure if you'll be able to make it back home.
If a Jamaican citizen can be murdered because of his sexual orientation, there's no guarantee that a foreigner, an outsider, will not face that same kind of situation.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Russia's top court ducks a marriage proposal while Canada's parliament debates it. Aussie activists target Queensland inequality. And courageous queers confront Jamaican violence. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Sydney Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending February 19, 2005. Russia's Supreme Court this week found that it lacks the authority to open marriage to same-gender couples. For that reason, it dismissed the appeal of two gay men who were asking the court to amend two clauses of Russia's family code. Plaintiffs Edward Mersin, a member of the Bashkortostan State Assembly, and Edward Mishin, editor of Kvir magazine, had applied for a marriage license in Moscow last month, but were rejected. They believe it violates both Russia's constitution and the European Convention on Human Rights to restrict marriage to heterosexual couples. They're not actually a couple themselves, but they plan to appeal to the European Court of Human Rights in their quest to open marriage to Russian gays and lesbians.
We must always remember that separate but equal is not equal.
Canada's Liberal Party Prime Minister Paul Martin this week led off the second reading of his government's bill to open marriage to same-gender couples with a ringing endorsement of equality's importance to the nation. He said,
"To those who would oppose this bill, I urge you to consider that the core of the issue before us today is whether the rights of all Canadians are to be respected. I believe they must be. Justice demands it. Fairness demands it. The Canada we love demands it."
Emphasizing that the courts of seven provinces and one territory have already changed the definition of marriage, he attempted to reframe the debate, saying,
"There is only one issue before the House in this debate. For most Canadians, in most parts of our country, same-sex marriage is already the law of the land. Thus, the issue is not whether rights are to be granted. The issue is that whether rights that have been granted are to be taken away."
To override the courts would require invoking the so-called notwithstanding clause, something no prime minister has ever done, and something Martin claimed would threaten the rights of all Canadians. Marriage equality opponents, who have said it would not be necessary to use the notwithstanding clause to return to a heterosexual definition of marriage, Martin called insincere, disingenuous, and wrong, citing the opinion of 134 constitutional law scholars.
Leader of the opposition Conservative Party, Stephen Harper, called Martin's approach a blindly ideological interpretation of the Charter. He proposed an amendment in which the Commons would deny the bill a second reading because the principle of the bill fails to define marriage as the union of one man and one woman to the exclusion of all others. Calling compromise the real Canadian way, he said his party would be proposing further amendments to define marriage exclusively as between one man and one woman, while allowing the provinces to offer same-gender couples equal legal standing through other forms of civil union. He said his party would also be offering amendments to protect everyone who wanted to stand apart from same-gender marriages, not just religious leaders asked to perform weddings. Harper stated flatly that same-sex marriage is not a human right. He cited a United Nations Commission's 2002 response to New Zealanders seeking marriage equality.
Marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples is a current legislative issue in New Zealand, one that's fueled some massive religious protests. At this week's Big Gay Out Pride Festival in Auckland, Some confrontations with religious protesters got physical, at least to the point of pushing and shoving, although no arrests or injuries resulted. Justin Pierce of the Independent Baptist Church came with a sign reading, "God hates homosexuality," and tried to preach to the several thousand lesbi-gays his belief the Bible calls their sex sinful. His intended audience also tried to drown him out with chants of shame and an accordion, while the renowned openly lesbian entertainers, the Top Twins, offered him hugs instead. After a while, the crowd simply ignored him and his fellow demonstrators.
In other recent Pride news from Down Under, the 10th annual Pride March in Melbourne, Australia, was widely praised for the quality of its organizing and set some new records. An estimated 60,000 lesbian, gay, and trans people marched in 99 contingents before a crowd of about 50,000. The state of Victoria's police show band participated for the first time, and the Princes Hill Secondary College became the first school ever to officially support and join the march. There were numerous events and exhibits in the Midsummer Festival surrounding the end of January Melbourne Pride March, including non-legal wedding ceremonies. But the talk of the city were the 4-meter-tall banners on Melbourne Town Hall. Their photos by Angela Bailey showed men and women cross-dressed in the outfits of comic book superheroes.
Earlier this month, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Festival held its launch rally and concert with a crowd of 10 to 12,000 revelers. New South Wales Governor Marie Bashir gave a welcoming address. The festival features more than 100 events and exhibits before the culminating Mardi Gras parade.
This week, Valentine's Day was marked by several events around Australia. A Love In for Love Equality in Brisbane organized a campaign for equal treatment of gay youth under Queensland state law, which, although gender neutral, currently applies a higher age of consent to anal sex than to other acts. The year-old national group, Australian Marriage Equality, held its official launch event, a speakers forum in Sydney.
There were also Valentine's Day actions around the U.S. where groups have made February Freedom to Marry Month. In California's 7th Freedom to Marry campaign, gay and lesbian couples attempted to apply for marriage licenses in 58 counties, and even 9 high school couples in Victorville held a mock wedding as a demonstration of support. But by far the most widely reported event was San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom's City Hall celebration of the anniversaries of more than 4,000 gay and lesbian couples who were married there last year. Legal action stopped the city from licensing those marriages after about 4 weeks, and later the California Supreme Court voided them all. Newsom urged a crowd of about 1,500 to continue the struggle. Other places where same-gender couples were applying for marriage licenses and being rejected included Allentown, Pennsylvania, and Pontiac, Michigan.
At least a half dozen demonstrations were staged around the U.S. In Houston, Texas, there was a mass wedding for 42 same-gender couples at the local gay-supportive Metropolitan Community Church. A rally of about 700 people outside the State House in Olympia, Washington, emphasized religious support for marriage equality.
There were dueling demonstrations at the state capitol in Santa Fe, New Mexico, as Republicans held a rally celebrating so-called traditional marriage and family. But supporters of gay and lesbian marriage were demonstrating by the hundreds there as well, including at least one couple celebrating the anniversary of their marriage a year ago in Sandoval County. New Mexico's attorney general intervened to stop the licensing of same-gender couples there with an opinion that those marriages were illegal.
African-American anti-gay conservative pundit and never-elected political hopeful Alan Keyes has cut ties with his 19-year-old lesbian daughter, Maya Marcel Keyes, after it was announced she'd be a featured speaker at a rally in Maryland. The rally launched a lobby day this week by the lesbi-gay group Equality Maryland. Marcel Keyes devoted most of her speech to the plight of a gay male friend who'd been thrown out by his conservative family and died a victim of abuse and life on the street. But she revealed that her own family has stopped communicating with her, ejected her from their home, and cut off her college tuition. Unlike her friend, she's received hundreds of offers of support and even a scholarship from the Point Foundation, a group that helps keep throwaway gays and lesbians in college. Her father famously remarked in an interview last year that the vice president's lesbian daughter, Mary Cheney, is a selfish hedonist and went on to say, "If my daughter were a lesbian, I'd look at her and say, that is a relationship that is based on selfish hedonism. I would also tell my daughter that it's a sin, and she needs to pray to the Lord God to help her deal with that sin." Marcel Keyes describes her father as having a lot of integrity.
Britain this week saw the first announcement of a gay male couple's engagement ever to be printed in the 220-year-old Times of London. John O'Connor and Mark Jones announced that they will be blessed at an Anglican church in London once they contract a legal civil partnership. The British Parliament hasn't actually created those civil partnerships yet, but the bill is in progress and is expected to be enacted later this year.
And finally, openly lesbian rocker Melissa Etheridge has won Grammy Awards in the past, but although she was a failed nominee at this week's Grammy festivities, she won something bigger than a statuette. She performed in a heartfelt tribute to Janis Joplin in her first public appearance since announcing she'd been diagnosed with breast cancer. Was successfully treated for that disease, but she thrilled thousands of cancer survivors by daring to show a side effect of her chemotherapy to the Grammy crowd and a huge TV audience. In a move that brought much media attention to cancer, Etheridge appeared on stage and on the arm of her partner Tammy Lynn Michaels, looking healthy and beautiful with a gleaming bald head.
That's News Wrap for the week ending February 19th, 2005, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
Would you speak out for queer rights if your life was literally on the line? You'll be inspired by two brave Jamaican freedom fighters who are doing just that later in the program. The Australian state of Queensland currently criminalizes gay youth by making anal sex by people under 18 years old punishable by up to 14 years in prison. Yet other forms of consensual sexual expression, including having babies, are legal there at age 16. On the eve of Valentine's Day in Brisbane, a love-in for love equality drew several groups and individuals to the first ever public rally to demand a truly equal age of consent under Queensland law. This Way Out correspondent John Frame, who helped organize the event, has this report.
Paul Martin from the Queensland AIDS Council, new general manager, in fact. You made a very supportive press release regarding reform of the criminal code. Can you give us your personal understanding about why the sodomy law should be removed?
Well, the Queensland AIDS Council believes in equality, first and foremost, and that the current state law is unequal, that there is no real reason, no sensible reason why anal sex should be treated any differently than vaginal or any other sex. We believe that the unequal treatment of anal sex in the state's laws means that young people might be reluctant to come forward to access sexual health information. It also means that workers, sexual health workers, teachers and so on, may be reluctant to talk to young people about anal sex for fear that they're somehow going to encourage it or that they're going to be promoting underage sex. It doesn't make sense that a heterosexual couple at 16 can have a child and raise that child and that's fine, but the same couple or a gay couple can't have anal sex at 16. The law doesn't make sense, it doesn't do any good, but it does lots of harm, and that's why it needs to go.
Shelley from PFLAG, how are you?
Very well, thanks, John.
It's great to see parents and friends of lesbians and gays out supporting an issue like equal rights, but how do you see that this impacts in a positive way?
What, parents and friends supporting here? Well, I think it shows the young ones that they're not on their own and there are parents and adults that do support them, and also because I suppose being straight also is another advantage, it shows that not everybody's narrow-minded or one-sided with their thinking.
I'd like the idea of at 16 you're informed and empowered so that if you choose to be sexually active,
yeah, that's right.
you can do anything you like that comes to your mind that's consenting, safe, pleasurable.
Yes, I agree. But I think also, too, if you inform your children about good, safe sex practices, all it is it's information. It's not actually a license for the kids to go out and practice it. And I also did some research when I was at uni, and I found that kids, if they do go and have sexual intercourse at an early age, they're empowered by the information, so they're more inclined to do it safely. And I think with my boys, that was an example of that, because I gave them lots of good safe sex information, and to talk about sexuality was never an issue. And I know that both of them were relatively late in starting compared to what a lot of the kids are these days.
Valentine's Day Eve. And your name?
G'day.
This Loving for Love Equality is looking especially for equal rights and protection for youth under the law in Queensland. How do you personally feel about it?
I feel that if we're looking for equality in our society, which is supposedly democratic, then we need equal rights with all people of all sexuality and all genders. So, yeah, we should be given the same right.
So, how old are you?
I'm 16.
So, do you see then that there is a perception that if you're 16 and you're perhaps gay or bisexual, that people might treat you as if you're less than heterosexual? Does that happen?
Yeah, all the time. It's really difficult when you're coming from a conservative town like I do. I live in Toowoomba, and it's not that easy to be open there, and it's really difficult to sort of express yourself and talk like with your peers about what you want to do and what you want to experiment with and just try to get comfortable with your sexuality. And when no one's supporting you, it's kind of difficult.
So how about seeking support then from, say, a school counsellor? Is that the sort of thing you'd consider?
Probably not. That would be a bit weird. If I find other gay or bisexual youths around me, I like to talk to them and just share experiences. And, yeah, just to talk to open people and my friends, even that's okay. Yeah.
I've spoken with another couple of young men this afternoon who've said that they might be 16 or 17 and they're aware of the law as regards to it banning anal intercourse until they're 18, but they may also choose to ignore the law. Do you feel it's reasonable that you should have to face up to perhaps doing a sexual act that's potentially criminal?
I think that we should be allowed to do what we want within reason. And, yeah, it's just if we didn't work for change within our own privacy, then nothing's going to happen. So we just have to be right up in your face and sort of say this is our right. Yeah, I think that we should just strive to be more accepted, but not live like frightened of the law, just live within reason and sort of promote the fact that we are humans and equality should be for all people. Yeah.
G'day. Thank you very much for chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks. That's cool. Yeah.
That was This Way Out correspondent John Frame in Brisbane, Queensland, talking with some of the participants in that Australian state's first ever Love In for Love Equality.
5678.
Hi, this is Bill Condon. Recently wrote this screenplay for Chicago. Knowledge is power, so stay informed by listening to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Jamaica's lesbian, gay, bi, and trans communities live in a bygone age compared to their North American, European, and Aussie Kiwi counterparts. Undaunted by the homophobic violence that surrounds them, activists in the Caribbean island nation are determined to build a future of inclusivity and justice. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch recently sponsored two representatives from the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays, or JFLAG, on a 7-city networking tour around the U.S. to help them in their quest. During their stop in Los Angeles, This Way Out's Lucia Chappelle spoke with Gareth and Carlene, who cannot use their full names, about JFLAG's courageous and unprecedented work.
We are the only LGBT organization in Jamaica just now. JFLAG was formed in 1998. There was an increase in homophobic violence against gays and lesbians in Jamaica. So we see the need to create an organization which will represent gays and lesbians and be their voice and speak for them.
Now, JFLAG also grew out of and is part of the Jamaican AIDS support group. Is that correct?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Because part of it is that Jamaica Aid Support and JFLAG work closely because we work with minority groups, but we're formed because the gays and lesbians were neglected and no one really wanted to work with this group. So that gave birth to Jamaica Aid Support. And the fact that the other aspect for gay man life also include the homophobia that he or she faces, we then the legal aspect of it in terms of advocacy came about, and JFLAG was formed to deal with that component of the whole person.
What was the situation for lesbians, gays, and all sexuals like in Jamaica at the time JFLAG was founded?
Well, the situation was and is a very violent one, one that, you know, we all live in fear for our lives because every day you get up, you're not sure if you'll be able to make it back home because the Jamaican society is actually very, very homophobic. It's something that is deeply embedded in our culture and also our religion and our music also emphasize the homophobia. Lesbians and gay men just couldn't go out and just be themselves. You know, they have to be closeted even to date. They face, you know, rapes and beatings and murders and, you know, no one to stand up for them.
Just this past summer, you, in fact, lost one of the co-founders of JFLAG.
Yes, that's Brian Williamson. And Brian was there with us from the beginning. He shared the vision of JFLAG, and he was the face and the voice for JFLAG. He was the only person who was out and was the only person who would go on national TV, have his picture printed in the press, be on the radio, on the talk shows, and representing JFLAG and openly. And he was stabbed 92 times. The legacy that he left us was that of his courage and his willingness to work and his belief in the whole thing that gays and lesbians deserve to be treated equal. We are continuing the work that he had started for us.
It can't be easy to continue knowing that that happened to him.
No, it's not easy. And also, not just knowing that that happened to him, but also seeing what our brothers and sisters face daily when they go out. People are being really beaten to almost death. Some are murdered, and then there's nothing that protects us, absolutely no law that protects us. And being activists as we are, it's even more dangerous because, you know, of course, we'll be accused of, okay, so you want to come and taint this society with your homosexuality, you know, with your nastiness, you know, as I would put it in Jamaica. And in Jamaica, it's believed that homosexuality is a disease and, you know, we need to be cured. And also that it's not a black people thing. It's something foreign that, you know, it's a habit that we've learned. And therefore, you know, we're forced to live in the closet, to hide ourselves, to be ashamed of ourselves. As it stands right now, we are tired of actually hiding. You know, we just want to be living and be who we are.
Well, I know that you have attempted sometimes to go to the government to get sexual orientation added to the Charter of Rights Bill. Mm-hmm. What else are you doing? What can you do in your situation?
Back in 2001, we made that attempt, and it wasn't passed. They didn't agree on it. As it is just now, there is nothing that we can really do within Jamaica itself, in that all the avenues are closed. And the channels that we would want to engage dialogue with, they're not receptive. So basically, we are left alone. We are ostracized. We are in the country, but we're not a part of the country because the systems that are there for us to interface with and that would protect everybody else is not there for us. So what it leaves us is in a position where we have to work with other international organizations for them to share their expertise and help us develop strategies, one, for us to cope. That's even the main part of it, to help us cope, to continue to do the work that we're doing, and also to help us to develop some strategies that we'll be able to use to put pressure on our government to, at least in the initial stage, to create a platform that we can have dialogue. At least that we need for the initial, that we can have dialogue. And once we can talk about the situation, then we think that we'll be able to move forward from there.
And so that's why you're here in the U.S. What was the main purpose of the trip this time?
Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch did some research in Jamaica, and they've been doing it for over 3 years now. And based on their findings, they decided that they're going to publish some reports, which they did. And our government didn't take kindly to the findings. And again, the wider society didn't, and we face a lot of physical abuse, and we find more persons were turned out of their homes, more young girls and boys were turned out of their families, were discriminated against at school, teacher turning against students, police force involved in inciting violence and beating gays and lesbians. And so Amnesty been trying to help us, and so they designed a strategy in terms of having us here in the States on a 7-city tour to talk to other LGBT organizations.
And political
persons within the State Department, in Congress, so that we can at least develop strategies. And they can share with us some of the strategies that we can use to put pressure on our government, and also to heighten the awareness and let people know that there is a high level of homophobic violence in Jamaica.
Us fighting our battle alone in Jamaica, oftentimes kind of make us discouraged. So at least if we know that we have other LGBT people in our corner and who are ready, you know, to back us on whatever grounds, you know, that's strength for us.
And also on the premise that Jamaica has signed on to many international treaties that it speaks to human rights. And trust me, we're not living up to that. And a part of it also, which is sad, is that if a Jamaican citizen can be murdered because of his sexual orientation, there's no guarantee that a foreigner, an outsider, would not face that same kind of a situation. So we are asking that even though it is not an America problem or a European problem, it's a human rights situation and it involves everybody. And so we're asking for government officials here in the States to take action, because the United States is a powerful country. And we all know that.
The power is not used always in the best ways.
Oh, yes. Yes.
For information about the Jamaica Forum for Lesbians, All Sexuals, and Gays online, log on to www.jflag.org. Next time on This Way Out, Gareth and Carlene talk with This Way Out's Lucia Chappell about the complex controversies inspired by violent anti-gay lyrics in reggae dancehall music.
There were lots of debate and discussion and people coming to realize that, you know, these lyrics were really inciting violence against the LGBT people.
That's next time on This Way Out. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, and John Frame contributed program material. Peter Tosh sang Get Up, Stand Up, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. It's you, our listeners, who keep this program on the air. And you can get some queer history and top music and movie reviews on specially produced audio CDs as a bonus. You can also support this program by visiting the This Way Out benefit auction area at alternabid.com. And to be sure you don't miss a week of This Way Out, you can subscribe to high-quality audio cassettes of our program. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on Fresh FM, Nelson Marlboro, New Zealand, WRVU, Nashville, Tennessee, KDHX, St. Louis, Missouri, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. The whole world's gonna stay tuned.